One thing, if you try to use the stepper code that was posted the other day, the notes were right, but the example code on GitHub still had a small bug in it. Those were fixed throughout the day yesterday and a little bit this morning. So if you tried those out and it weren't working for you, give it another shot with the updated version on GitHub. But again, what was shown in the notes was correct. So if you're working straight from that, you should have been fine too. Before we continue today, other than that little piece of announcement, any questions about from you guys about what you have coming up on Tuesday? Yes, sir.
When we did the competition, it's all teams do individually or against each other?
So the question is, hey, are we running individually or against each other on Tuesday? What is it? Individually on Tuesday. Okay. How many runs do you have? And how much time? If at most three within 5 minutes. Any runs you don't get to or will be counted as a DQ. Okay. Scored according to your sum total of the three scores. Right. And we're running just like our individual contest in that you can't even enter the zone and start setting up until your time starts. Okay. What we may do, you will be by yourself. We may have you guys kind of set up at the same time, and then if you have, we'll alternate to make sure you're not running towards the center at the same time. And if you have to wait for the other team, we'll tack 15 seconds or whatever on your time to let you go. So we've had to do that in the past. I haven't looked at our timings this semester since we have a few fewer teams than in past semesters, but we've had to do that to make sure we get through everybody in class time. But there'll be nobody beside you. That person will just be across. Yes, sir. What do you mean by track conditions?
Well, so mostly the rotation of the center, that's going to be relatively consistent, right?
Yeah. Come test. It's open lab hours tomorrow from 2 to 5, Saturday from 12 to 3, Sunday from 3 to 6, and then there's some Monday, 5:30 to 7 on Monday? Come see that stuff. Come test on the track. You have to trigger from the track itself. Come test that. Don't be surprised on Tuesday. All right. Other questions? Yes, sir.
So, for the competition coming up, you said that we can do a push button to test it, but it
has to trigger from the track. So you're plugging into the track, everything powered from the track.
Okay.
Your computer can't be attached. We're going to click the button that's down there on the track. And I've been trying to show everybody, if it's new faces in Open Lab, how that works. If you want to know how it works for your testing, come to Open Lab. We'll show you or talk to someone that's been there during Open Lab hours already. Everything is hooked up. It's been hooked up for a couple weeks now. The questions. Okay, so we're going to keep running through what would be maybe our, I guess probably next to last one of these MicroPython deals in terms of the class. We'll run quickly through those in-class exercises 8, 9, and 10 from Tuesday. Who had a chance to look at those? Who did look at those? In-class exercise 8, we asked you to connect the push button, turn on a green LED. When the push button is pressed, turn the red LED on, turn the green LED off. Okay. When the button is pressed again, turn off the red LED and the green LED and count how much time was elapsed. And the context of this was using those timing functions that we learned in last lecture. Okay. So what's the setup piece of this? Import PYB, import time, right? We're going to need timing stuff, of course. Set up the LEDs, right. So pretty much what you want. And we're starting with the green LED on, so that's kind of, you can include that in the setup kind of part of it if you want, right? The example told us to start with the green LED on, okay? The logic for this, I did it in the most obvious way possible, so it's kind of longish. So let's bounce over to GitHub and look at this guy. So we saw the setup from there up. I have this while true, right? So what I do is, just like the code we've seen before, basically waiting there for that to sense the first push of the button. So that's like code we've seen already to wait for a button to be pressed. Okay. Once that button is pressed, I get the current time with that time ticks milliseconds. Right? Hopefully that looks at least familiar from last time on Tuesday for getting the current time in milliseconds. Okay. I changed the LEDs according to what was outlined in the problem definition. I actually sleep a little while to make sure I'm separating out buttons. One thing you'll notice, if you're reading buttons, we have to do what's called debouncing a button. The physical contact of the button will actually bounce a little bit. And the processor is fast enough to read that bounce as multiple presses. So we have to kind of handle that manually. One inelegant way to do that is just delay between reading the button again. Some short delay. So I've done that, and I have this kind of flag variable that I call button timing. And I set it to true, and then I kind of explain that if it's true, we're waiting for that second button press. Okay. Then I have a while loop down here. And again, you look, there's kind of all nice explanation. All the code on GitHub has all these nice paragraphs telling you how to do it. Okay. Of course, none of this helps you if you're not trying. So while you're waiting for that second button press, right, we read the button. We do the same thing, and then we calculate the difference between when we read the button the second time and when we read it the first time using that time.ticksDiff. Okay. And then as we are instructed in the instructions to print out the elapsed time between the two. So, again, please take a look at this example outside of class. You're not going to learn this stuff if you're not working on it. The time we have in class is not enough. Just like the time you learn, you have in class in statics or dynamics or calculus is not enough to learn what you need to know. Yes, sir.
Yeah, for the, I guess earlier talking about this, you have the button, like the more advanced way to start the button.
The interrupt, yeah.
I know you have like the explanation of it on your website. Do you have like the actual example code for that as well?
Yes.
Okay, so there is some.
So. Yeah, so here's our website. That's linked. Yeah, where was that at? Using an interrupt to sense trial start. Yeah, so that code will get you there. If you want to talk about that, let's talk offline, because I think that's given, you know, where we're at now, I think that's beyond what class time's worth. Okay, so that was example 8. Again, the lecture's there for you. Exercise 9 was basically to try to get you to learn how to handle the start button on the track, right? In a simple way, get that baseline code working for you in a simple way so that you can extend it out for what you have to do on Tuesday. Okay, and basically what you're asked to do is connect that push button. Well, actually, that was example 10 that does that. Example 10, we'll come back to 9 then, since we already started talking about this one. Exercise 10 was set up to start you out for what you have to do on Tuesday. We're going to sense the button being pressed, move the servo, but only let that happen once per 30 seconds. Right? So it's like your design on Tuesday has to do its operation only once per 30 seconds, effectively. Right? Like we talked in class, if you have that kind of set up and you're checking these switches a bunch of times and what you do takes less than 30 seconds, you check the switch again, it'll start over. Okay, we talked about that extensively on Tuesday. So we want to do this. We want to sense when the button's pressed, do something, and not let that happen again, even if the switch is pressed, until after 30 seconds has elapsed. Right. For the track, after that 30 seconds has elapsed, the button's not going to be pressed anymore. So it won't run again. So the setup there is just setting up the switch and the servo. And then we make setting the angle to 0 explicitly, even though this will do that for us. We make that explicit. And then our loop is pretty simple. right? We have a wild true that just sits there and runs forever, right? We're sensing the state of that button, and then if the button is pressed, we move the servo, sleep for a second, move it back to zero as instructed, and then, hey, that's going to take about a second, so sleep for 29 now before we do anything else. Okay? After it sleeps for 29, then we go back up and start checking it. The track would be not pressed anymore after that. But of course, if you have it wired as a push button on your device, on your breadboard, you can push away and it'll keep doing this every 30 seconds. Pretty straightforward. But this is effectively what you need to do to run your machine to sense the start of the track, right? That input pin is just what it gets plugged into the banana plugs on the track. Okay? Instead of just moving the servo here, you do whatever you need to do to move your device out and accomplish the task that you want to accomplish. And then you can tailor the sleep to how long that stuff takes. Yes, sir.
So if you had like a distance sensor,
yep.
You wanted it to start moving until it came to a certain distance, but you didn't want it to read that. You wanted it to stop reading distance after that point. You do a loop like that, where you'd say sleep 29 seconds after it gets to a certain distance. Like, you know what I mean?
No, I don't.
As it moves forward and you keep moving and doing other operations, you don't want it to keep checking distance. You just want a next phase of an operation to start once it reaches a certain distance from an object.
Well, it's only going to check distance like you're reading the IR sensor. You only gotta read the IR sensor when you tell it to read the IR sensor. I mean, the IR sensor is there working, but you only pull it for information when you want it. With a, you know, IR ADC.read will give you the current value. We'll go back to exercise 9. Excuse me. Again, doing some timing. And I have these timing exercises for you guys because that ends up being how most of you want to do your operation, your design, rather than rely on the sensors, even though that's the preferred and advised way to do it. So this is a way to get timing between button presses and doing things as a function of time effectively. So the setup of this, we needed LEDs, we needed a switch, so we need all 4 LEDs and the switch. And then basically, we're looking, again, sensing for that first press, okay? And then in the second press, we're looking for the time between them. The code blocks here I have in bold. There's actually some other code there, you know, the whole block of turning LEDs on or off. So if you look at the GitHub version of this, it has the actual code to turn, you know, all those LEDs off or on, right? So just cut that out so we can see all of it on one slide. And then if I'm keeping track of the time elapsed the whole time in this case, using a ticks diff, and then basically looking for how long it took me between button presses. And based on that elapsed time, I'm also setting LEDs on. Okay. So I would advise you, again, take a look at this on your own. If you have specific questions, come ask me. But know how to do this stuff. Okay. You need to know it for your final project. I'm trying to help you along to get the skills necessary. Okay, let's talk about a few other things. In your kit, you have your own motor driver. So while you can't use this in your final project for this class, I have about 4 or 5 senior project teams that have been bugging me once a week about how to do stuff for their senior project using the Pi board and their kit of stuff they bought in this class. Okay, so just introducing you to this. So get out of here. You might could use it for your own projects, or maybe when you get to senior projects, you can do it. So this motor driver actually uses the same driver chip that we use for the drive the stepper motors. So this guy here is the same one that's driving your stepper motor on your 201 board. But instead of talking to it over I2C, you have to kind of control it manually. So we have that for the Mechie 201 board. You have this guy that set off, handles the low-level motor control for you effectively. You say, hey, run the motor, and it handles the low-level stuff. And it's the one that actually talks to this chip on your board. Right? If you're using this guy, you have to talk to it manually from the Pi board. Pin layout looks like this, the ones we'd be concerned about. So this is power, basically. So you need, if you're trying to run a 12-volt motor, you need a 12-volt end goes to that pin. You also need a 5-volt end to power the logic of that chip. And those grounds all need to be connected. Okay. That standby pin needs to be pulled to ground. Okay. You have three inputs to control, one of the outputs of the motor driver. That controls DC motor A. You have three inputs from the PI board that controls motor B. So the control of the stepper motor, each of these controls one phase of that stepper. If you think about that stepper motor, we show on Tuesday. To control the speed of the motor, we use a method called pulse width modulation. So digital output, right, is either on or off, right? That's what digital means, zero or one, right? Zero or Vmax. So if we think about a digital input, look, could look something like this. It's off for a while, then it's on. Okay. But I want to be able to approximate some motor speeds somewhere between my zero and Vmax speeds of that motor. To do that, what I can do is instead pulse this voltage on and off rapidly. And typically you'll see PWM is 2,000 times a second, 20,000 times a second, 22 kilohertz, 20 kilohertz. Okay? So it's pulsing on between Vmax and zero 20,000 times a second. Okay? What you see here, what's the average voltage effectively? Somewhere, you know, about half, if you kept doing this, right? So if you're pulsing this thing on and off so rapidly, right, that's way faster than the motor dynamics are going to be able to react to that voltage, right? It's not going to have time. It doesn't have the dynamic, doesn't have the bandwidth to speed up and slow down with each pulse if you're pulsing that rapidly. So what the motor sees is kind of the average. Right? So it runs about half speed. Or the LED on your board where you can vary the brightness. It's doing exactly this. It's blinking that LED on and off, on and off, on and off this fast. And so fast that it doesn't look like it's blinking to you, but to the LED, it's seeing a kind of average of the voltage that's being blinked. So that's how the intensity of those onboard LEDs is varied. Okay. If you see something like this, this is kind of on half the time, off half the time. We say it's a 50% duty cycle. Okay, so what percentage of the time is on is what we call the duty cycle of that PWM command. All right. For example, if we're on instead of 10% of the time, we would say that's a 10% duty cycle, and it's about, you know, would be about running like a speed 10% of the maximum voltage. On your PI board, any of the pins you see that has a timer, so TIM, the PI board has 8 of them, I think. 12 timers. Some of them are overlapped on pins, though. So you have plenty of pins here that can do that PWM output for you, if you want. Okay. So to wire up a motor from your particular motor driver, you could do it something like this if you're interested. I need to make sure I get some power over to the logic of it. So that's these rails here going to the logic. I have some ground there. I have this enable pin has to be pulled up to 3V3. One sec. Okay. Notice that this guy is kind of upside down from how I just showed it to get the motor on that side. Then I would have some kind of 12 volt input over here. And that's what I've shown. We have this kind of connector that you could get to plug in a power supply like the one you have and get wires out the other side. One sec. And then I connect the motor here. Yes, sir. Okay. So wire there. And then we have three pins, in this case, that are the kind of three control pins for this particular motor. Okay. And while I have those three pins, what do I need to do with them to make this motor actually work? So that, we just look at the spec sheet of that motor driver. And there's a section of that spec sheet that would look like this. And those three pins are N1, N2, and PWM, what those pins are called on the chip itself. Okay. And there's kind of AN1, AN2, APWM, BN1, BN2, BPWM, depending on which motor you want to control. So you have to look at this truth table, and this tells you what you need to know, how you need to control those pins to make the motor do what you want it to do. Okay. So for example, if you want to go one direction, right? I can set N1 low, N2 high, and then PWM, the PWM command to set the speed, and I'm going to go counterclockwise. Okay. If I flip N1 and N2 and still have a PWM, I'm going to go clockwise. So what we see in this table, for the most part, is that N1 and N2 control direction, and that PWM command is what controls the speed. Okay? And I could do some other things, depending on the kind of high impedance stopping, low impedance stopping, those kind of things. But the main operation is make the thing spin at some kind of certain speed. Okay? So to make it spin clockwise, I need to control all three of those pins in the proper way. Per motor. In this case, you have two. Okay? And this is copied, again, this is straight out of that spec sheet for that motor driver chip. Okay. This is not something, I run into this with my research students all the time, actually. Don't get a chip or a board or something and try to guess what the things mean. Okay? You might be able to guess right, but look at the actual data sheet. It's going to tell you exactly what things need to be. Okay? If you get some part and you need to do some drawings for it or work with it, don't try to put your calipers to it. Try to find the actual drawing from the manufacturer and work from that. Okay? So let's try to control motor A with this particular thing. Right? And you'll see, and one reason I'm showing this is that there's a lot more to MicroPython than what we're learning here. So in any case, we have A1 and A2. They're just digital inputs. Right? They need to be high or low, digital outputs. So we can set them as digital outputs. In this case, they're X7 and 8. Okay? And then there's a little bit more work to set up that PWM pin. Okay? So we need to define the pin number, which in this case is X6. We need to set up the timer. So if we look at X6, we see that it's actually associated with timer 2. Okay? If you look at the Pi board pinout diagram, you can go back to that. X6, we could use either timer 2 or timer number 8. Okay, so we're going to use 2. Okay. So we're going to use timer 2. And we say, I want to set up what channel of that timer. Every timer has multiple channels. So I look back at the sheet. And it is, X6 is timer 2, channel 1. And I can set up timer 2, channel 1, and I give it a timer and the pin that I'm plugged into. Okay. And now I can control that motor by doing stuff just like this. Right. So I need to set the value of one of these guys, either 1, 0 or 0, 1, depending on which direction I want to turn the motor. And then I can set the pulse width percent, the duty cycle, of that PWM command based on how fast I want that motor to spin. Okay? Can you think of a better way to do this? Because then if you want to change direction, if you want to change speed, you kind of have to do all this stuff every time. How could I do this in a bit more elegant way? I'm going to function out of it, basically, right? So I could have some, spin forward or set speed forward or something like that. It kind of does all this in a function. You still have to do it, but you're not having to type out this block of code every time. You're just calling a function that does that for you. So there's actually a file on our GitHub that has all those functions on it, and you can import it just like we do for the ones for your board. Right? And it has built in, and you can kind of set things up like this by defining the pins, right? And then set it up kind of like we do. It's a little bit more just a few more terms there, but just like we do for your DC motor or separate motor or anything like that. And then once I've defined that thing, then I can do commands like you do on your motor, right? And all that's done is that TB6612, which is the name of that chip, has abstracted away all the low-level control stuff for you, right? So that this is really readable in your algorithm for whatever you're writing. Instead of set this pin high, set that pin low, change the pulse width duty cycle, right? This is readable. This is understandable just reading that code. There's one main reason you'd want to do it this way.
So you can do this on the
Yeah.
That's already that way?
Yep, that's correct. Questions about that? All right, so let's talk about a couple of pieces left of your kit we haven't talked about yet. You have this magnetic switch. And your kit is actually, the switches you have would be something like that's installed on a home security system on windows and doors to check when they're closed. So you have a piece that looks like this. It has two wires coming out of it. It has some holes. I would recommend you use those little screws. You guys get, they're brand new, so you can use those screws. I'll have to buy some more in the future, rather than the adhesive back on it. Okay, so it's probably screwed in rather than stick it in. And there's another piece that's actually a magnet. Okay, and what happens is anytime that magnet, or probably any other magnet, gets close to this switch, there's what's called a reed switch inside, it actually closes. Okay, so basically what happens, anytime that magnet gets close, it's like a push button being pressed in terms of how you would read it with your board. Okay? So we wire it up just like a push button and read it just like a push button. It's a digital input. Okay? So that other magnet comes into play, this pin's going to go high because that guy closes. Okay? Plug it into your board. Here I've wired it into the X7 input on your board because the other day we did X6 for the track start, for example. Okay, and for, in terms of your board, you can just, those two white wires, doesn't matter which order they go or anything. Okay, and then the magnetic switch, the code to read that then is just like reading the push button, really. Right, you set that pin up as an input, and then you just get the value of that particular input. Okay, if the button's closed, it's high. If the magnet's, if the button's open, it's low, which means if it's magnet's close by, it's high. Magnet's far away, it's low. How could you use that particular switch in your final contest stuff?
If you have something that's closing, after it closes, you want it to do a certain operation. So.
Yeah, so you could have the magnet mounted on one part and the switch mounted on, or switch mounted on one part, magnet mounted on a trap door or something.
Right.
So you wait and you spin the motor until the trap door. You see the magnet lined up, you know that door is closed. Now do the next thing. Right, that's good. Right. What's that? Yeah, so you could have, do something similar with an arm. Right? Have something spinning on an arm that senses when these things get lined up, the magnet's in, it's closed, I'm in within range where I want to be. Right. So this would be a pretty good way for you guys to get kind of relative positioning. You could have the magnet at the front of your, you know, you have a device long ways in the start zone, the magnet up at the front, and drive forward until things are lined up now. And I knew I drove forward far enough, maybe, or extended forward far enough. So you can have some sensing rather than just trying to time that out all the time. It'd be much more robust. And doing so is really easy. It's just reading a button. Okay. You also have this little small solenoid. Does not have much force, but could be good for pulling a little pan or kicking a jockey out into the center for perhaps. Okay? So it actually retracts. So if we're looking at here, this side retracts when it's energized. It does have a shaft that goes all the way through, so it goes out the back side as well. Okay? So if you wanted to push stuff out, you would have to put it on that side. So you energize it and it pops it that way. There's a shaft on the back side. Okay. And it has this little spring return that when it's not energized, this guy returns out. Pretty standard solenoid setup. These are either on or off. There's no kind of in between. You can't control the length at all. It's just on or off. Okay. We're actually going to use a MOSFET to control it. So your pi board can't output enough current for that to energize that coil, to be able to retract it, to generate a strong enough magnetic field to retract the solenoid. Okay. So MOSFET, this article here has a really nice overview at kind of a beginner's level of how this particular circuit works that I've embedded in your board for you. And basically we're just using a MOSFET as a high, as a relay, more or less. A switch on a high voltage line. Turn it on and off. So, my first point, do not leave this solenoid on in the retracted state. You will destroy it. You're going to burn it up. Okay? Because if it's on, it's just dumping current through the magnetic coils of that, that solenoid and just dumping current and dumping current and dumping current. Okay? That's not good. Okay? So whenever we trigger the solenoid, we have to make sure that we turn it off shortly thereafter. It's meant to be triggered on and off, right? Not continuously held on. Is that clear? All right. So basically, we're going to connect it on, in this case, to the, you know, what I'm calling here kind of the upper through terminals. And there's one of those labeled 5 volts, the rightmost one of those. That's where this little servo, this little solenoid plugs into. Okay. And then basically, from there, it's just a digital output that handles turning that MOSFET on and off. Okay. So the setup and code is all pretty simple. It fits on one slide. Okay. So in this case, we have the solenoid. We set it up as an output. It's plugged into Y3 on the board. Okay. And then I can just do solenoid high, turns that switch on, gets current to the solenoid, it'll retract. You need to sleep just a little while to give it a second, give it some time to actually retract, and then make sure you always set it low again. Right? Don't leave it on. All right? And then generally you want more time between when you turn it off and turn it back on again than you do while it's on. Right? You see a lot of kind of, particularly these kind of cheaper components, their duty cycle, the time they're supposed to be on, is typically 10% or something like that, 25%. So it shouldn't be run more than 25% of the time. Right? You run it for 1 second, you better sleep it for 3 seconds. So we do 10x here. Key point, again, this is pretty easy, right? I define that pen, and I just set it high when I want that thing to retract. Make sure you always set it low. Okay. Example code, those drawings are all on GitHub. Okay. Questions about any of that? Yes, sir. Yes. Other questions? Okay. So today I wanted to make sure we got through that. It is on the calendar as a final project workshop. So you're welcome to hang out, discuss with your team. Recommend that you probably do since you all have time available right now. Okay. If you have questions about the coding, something you've worked on specifically, I'll hang out for a while. Certainly won't hang out if all you guys disappear. But it's your time to work on your project and try to get ready for Tuesday. We'll have open hours tomorrow, 2 to 5. Hold on, Saturday from 12 to 3, Sunday 3 to 6, and then some on Monday and Tuesday. All right, thanks.